Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. The time is now 6:03 p.m. on the East Coast, 3:03 p.m. on the West Coast, and you're tuning in to the TMGS, the Michael Gay Show. Okay, so I'm looking at some friend requests that are popping up on my page here, so I appreciate that. And some folks will be surprised at the folks that I accept as my friends. They're my friends. They're my cohorts. They're my sometimes enemies. Well, I won't say enemies, but, you know, we agree to disagree. And so that's cool with me. Again, welcome to TMGS. It's the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. And we have a lot of great topics we're going to talk about today. And it's amazing what's going on in this world. Don't you agree? I find it amazing because things that happened last year, as I'll say every week, continue to go on this year. They just continue to go on. Court cases, you know, crimes, and this, that, and the other. Happy New Year. Well, last year is still going to be part of this year. Can't just let that go. It's there. We're going into Black History Month. Yep, Black History Month. February, the shortest month of the year. Well, that's cool. You know, Black History should be celebrated 365, is what I'm thinking. But, you know, it is what it is. It's a miracle. It's what we deal with. And I'm glad that my co-host, Janet Davis, brought it to my attention that we need to talk about Black History Month, because guess what? There's a lot of things going on this month, like the Super Bowl. Yes, the biggest sport in America, the Super Bowl, will take stage this month. I believe this is, what, the 13th? Sunday the 13th. And people who don't know a damn thing about football will be sitting in front of the television and rooting for a team they don't even know about or don't even care about. But it is the tradition that we do every year. And then we start looking at the fact that Super Bowl normally happens in Black History Month, February. But this is going to be the most interesting Super Bowl of all time. Not just the fact of the Super Bowl, but of what's happening in the NFL. So we have a lot of topics coming up. And then in our second hour, we have a special guest. And I think one of our co-hosts, which I love and respect her, and she's just an awesome individual, an author. She's just, I mean, awesome individual. If you're blessed to be a friend of hers, then you're blessed to have a good friend. Cotton Campbell brought to our attention Lady Justice, who's doing a lot of things of community activists in her area. And then when she was telling me about this individual, I was like, you know, this will be a good conversation, because no disrespect to Lady Justice, but she's doing things that many people are doing in other communities, but we don't talk about those things. We don't talk about the people who are doing those things. The media does a little bit, not enough, for us to have any concern for the homeless or the jobless. Do I need to repeat it? We don't hear enough about helping and the people who are helping the homeless and the jobless and the things that we can do. We don't really talk about those type of things in the media. And to be honest, I'm not going to just blame the media, but just among ourselves. I see people homeless every day. On my job, I see the same guy every day standing in front of the store with not house shoes, but sandals on. When it was freezing cold, this man had on sandals with no socks. No socks on. This is the world that we live in. This is the world that where when we talk about humanity and doing things for each other, there are people out here that probably had a good job, probably had a decent income. And I'm not going to speculate. I'm not going to say, oh, because of the pandemic. Yes, the pandemic did play a role for a lot of people. But I still look at companies and greed. And I'm going to touch on that later on in the conversation when it comes to companies and greed. The 1 or 2%, you can put the number on it however you want to, compared to the rest of us. But where the things that you buy should not cost what they cost. They really shouldn't. They really shouldn't. So I'm going to go ahead and open up the microphones, because we're going to really get into these conversations. Because my co-hosts are here, they're in the house. Of course, I have to open up the mic of the lady of the house, been with me from, oh my goodness, from Maestro Mike Live to Cool Critics to the TMGS, the one and only Miss Janet Pollard Hawkins Davis.
Okay. Good evening, Michael. How are you?
Well, I have to throw in that little bit of J. King type thing, you know, but I really want to go, Janet Pollard Hawkins Davis.
All right, Michael.
So that's going to be your new one. Well, go ahead. How are you doing?
Yeah. I'm doing great. I'm excited about this show and about Lady Justice. When you think of Lady Justice, you think of that bronze statue, you know, that's weight, got the scales in her hand and the sword in the other, and, you know, with that personification. So I know it's going to be a good conversation this afternoon, this evening, rather.
I see a couple of other co-hosts that are standing by. One has waved their hand. The other one hasn't. Waiting on him to wave his hand so I can get him his introduction. But let me go ahead and open up the mic for the individual who has brought our guest to our attention. The one, the only, from KC is KC Cotton.
Campbell.
Okay. He's in rare form tonight.
That was good. Hey, everybody. Okay. I'm looking forward to this show. Definitely.
Yeah, so am I.
Okay. Well, we got another individual. He's sitting in the cut. I guess he might be around a lot of noise, so he's going to be respectful and not open up his mic yet. But, bruh, you know to hit the number one, okay? So hit the number one. All right, so with that being said, okay, so I want to start off with this before we get into the topics. I want to start sharing some things each week, and I wish you guys would participate because, I'm sorry, maybe I'm just getting old, and I have some pet peeves about people, some complaints about people, some issues with people when they don't read things because the sign is right in front of you, when they don't listen because you're telling them. But here's the thing that I dealt with, and I'm not going to give you my daily one. This is the one of the week. So every week I'm going to share my pet peeve. So I go to the dollar store, and I buy a few items. The necessities, toothbrush, toothpaste. Okay, yeah, I need a new toothbrush, some toothpaste. Might as well get some, you know, deodorant, put on new one, you know. Some soap, yeah, I got to take a shower, you know. You know what? I might as well get the stuff that I need, the necessities for cleanliness and godliness, right? So I got about 10 items. And fortunately, I'm at a store that has a cashier. And she scans them and rings them up, and I pay her. She says, thank you. I'm standing there, and she looks at me. And she's like, do you need a bag? No, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and take this damn toothbrush and shove it in my damn mouth because it's going to go there anyway. I'm going to put this bar of soap in my back pocket. What do you mean, do I need a bag? Really? It's really gotten to that point that customer service just doesn't. The simplest thing is a bag. Now, you guys, correct me if I'm wrong. Have you ever gone to a store and you have more than five items and they don't even offer you a bag? Have you? Or maybe I'm just the only one.
Yes, I have. They're starting to do that more and more now.
Or better yet, when a store says, we're out of bags. I'm like, what?
Wait a minute, Michael. Not just bags. What about change? Someone told me an experience where they had a $100 bill. And they spent around $60, and the person was acting like they couldn't do anything because they didn't have change.
They didn't have change.
The cashier, yeah.
Well,
how are you going to run the store without change?
Well, here's the thing, and that's a good thing, and we're gonna run through this real quick. During the pandemic, I started understanding because for the fact there were not individuals going to the mint, per se, to make the money, right? Everything shut down. Even printing of money shut down. Coins, all that. They were out of coins more so than bills, right? And I experienced that whole thing. Even stores were saying, you know, correct change if possible and all that type of stuff. I get it. All right. But now we're you know, everything's up and running. But then somebody brought it to my attention. You have to remember, they really don't want you to use money anymore. Other countries don't even use pennies. Other countries don't even use pennies anymore. Is it Canada, I think? Let me Google that and make sure I'm right. But there's some countries that don't use, you know, as small as a penny. So they really want you to use credit. Think about it. If you use credit, they give you all these great, you know, incentives to use a credit card, right? Because now they can control the transfer or better yet, I won't say control, but they have more information of your purchases if you use a credit card compared to cash, right? Am I right or wrong?
Well, yeah, I normally use a card or a debit card because I don't have to worry about a receipt. I see this transaction when I look at my bank account, you know, and it's a lot more easier to just swipe. But if you do have money, I can understand because of COVID, people don't want to be touching bills because somebody might be sick and might have coughed on it or whatever. But you still, I think if you're going to be behind a cash register, you should have at least enough money to cash out a customer.
Okay, but here's the point I'm trying to say. And I agree with you, but understand what I'm saying. When this happened with the COVID, right, okay, handing out money to send it. But look at where society has come to where you are almost at the point of where you have to use a form of technology, a form of credit card, a debit card, a store card, whatever. And you know what happens? It's connected to you. Cash is not connected. That $100 bill, that $50 bill, that $20 bill, that whatever, it's not connected to your business. But that credit card, that debit card is. It's keeping track of your transaction and what you purchase, right? And how come you keep getting these emails from companies and stores and everything that knows everything you buy is because you use that card, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody speak up, please.
I said,
it's definitely keeping track of your daily. I mean, honestly, it's kind of scary. It's definitely keeping track of your daily purchases. I get shit that be like, hey, Michael, you can get a great deal on such and such. I just looked it up. I didn't buy anything. Yeah, but we know that you looked it up. So we're trying to give you the first one to check it out and get a good discount on it. That's kind of scary. Because what they're doing is where they are monitoring and they are not just monitoring, but they're keeping track of your habits of purchasing. They're keeping track of how you purchase. And then I was taught years ago that more than, you know what? A store will tell you what's important is customer service, right? If you're working in retail, right? Customer service. Well, customer service is in anything, not just in retail, in business. You got to take care of the customer. If you are a construction worker, or if you are whatever, it's customer service, how you treat your customer, if you're a contractor.
Right.
Customer service covers the whole thing. It's not just in retail. But you know what the key thing is? I learned was, and the person told me was, suggestive sale. You suggest to the customer what they need with that item that they're purchasing. Suggest that. Suggestive sale is really key. And the third thing is have a relationship with that customer to make sure they come back to see you, to come back to that store and trust and believe in the product and you as a salesperson. Suggestive sale. Are you buying a flat screen? Do you have something to mount it on? Or you need to buy this. Oh, you know what? You need to look at getting this too. Here's something that you need to get. You can sell a person anything once you get them to believe in your suggestive sale.
Yep, it's upsell.
That's called upsell? Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's not where you have to do it verbally. They do it on the internet. That's suggestive. Based on what you look at on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So with that
and
being said,
last,
I don't want to change.
The last customer that bought this and this, so you should think about buying this and this too.
Exactly. And some folks who work in retail have no experience with the product at all. They've just been trained to just sell it, never used it. There's people who've never used a hammer in their life. And I bet if you went in and said, which hammer do you think is the best? They'll just look and say, that one looks better. It looks heavier. And you'll buy it. It looks heavier.
That's the same
that's
for when you're in a restaurant and you have a person that's waiting on you, serving you. They make suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
that will help you get through that menu because I feel like they'd be trying to get you in and out. So if they make suggestions and it sounds good instead of just looking at a menu forever, you just go on and go with what they suggest.
Exactly. I mean, because they're looking at, they're getting minimum wage, but the major thing is that they're looking for the tips, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the more people, as you just said, they get in and out, the possibility of getting more tips. That's their job. And I'm saying that every waiter or waitress or waiter, I should say, it's now we're you know, in a time of where when you say a waiter, it means a male or female, to be politically correct. A waiter is a waiter now, right? Because
mm-hmm.
this person that's waiting on you, okay? I just saw a video just last night, a young lady, Raina. She's a world champion food eater. She eats tons of food in a matter of time or whatever. She's an Asian young lady out of California. I think I shared this with you guys before. She was here in Atlanta, went to steak something here, she ate a $700 gold covered steak, okay? $700.
What?
What is it, the steak with the bone in it? I can't even say the name of it.
T-bone?
It's
you
a ribeye. No, it's
the
a ribeye
don't
with
have
a long
bone.
Bone.
A porterhouse and a T-bone has a
no,
bone.
No. It's not. No, I'm not talking about. I'm talking about damn it! It's on the tip of my tongue. It's the big steak with the long bone. Chop, something chop. So you guys got me confused here. You know what I'm talking about,
yeah.
the steak where it has the long bone. These things aren't cheap. Come on now, y'all help me out. I just watched the video. It's on the tip of my tongue.
I know there is Delmonico, there's Porterhouse, there's Strip Steak, there's T-Bone, there's Ribeye. There's prime rib. You know,
this is the one. This is the one prime, that has the long bone. It has a long bone. I mean, folks. I mean, they order this all the time.
Is it the tomahawk?
A clown? A clown?
Tomahawk. There you go. Tomahawk steak. Right, the tomahawk steak. Thank you, Cotton. The tomahawk steak, which is really part of the ribeye. It really is. The tomahawk is part of the ribeye area, okay? And what I watched this on, and I'm sorry to all the folks that are tuning in right now, you saw what the topics are going to be. We're going to get to them, but I was just sharing something a little extra. But I'm looking at this woman who is here in Atlanta just on the 27th of this month, and she's world known. She travels the world. She's her net worth, I believe, is around $4 to $5 million from being an eater. Most people would think she's some big overweight woman. No, she's not. She's a very petite young lady. Her name is Raina. Very well known. And she's not the only one. But she was just recently here in Atlanta. And she's been overseas. I've seen many of her videos, and it's amazing to me. And she's become a internet celebrity with millions, not thousands, but millions of followers. And her net worth is like in the millions. And she's here in Atlanta eating a tomahawk steak wrapped in gold, what do they call it, leaf. Cost her $700 for the steak alone. Right after watching that, here's a video that popped up, and here's these guys that are eating, four guys. Their steak was $1,000, but they were eating all this other crap, you know, that is high dollar stuff. Their bill came up to $10,000. Of all the food they sent there and ate, right? $10,000. They gave a $5,000 tip.
Sorry, you said $5,000?
They gave a $5,000 tip after they ate $10,000 worth of food. Okay? So,
that's crazy.
With that being said, and I'm serious, I'm not lying. You can Google it. You can go on Facebook. You can go on in Facebook search these type of videos, and they show you. It's reality. It's what people do. There's no way in hell I will pay $700 for a piece of meat. There's no way. But I guess if you can afford it, you can do it. You do it because I can, right? That's the mentality that we have. I buy this, you know why? Because I can. I can afford it.
Right. That's the best part.
Because I can. I have the money to do this. To do something that nobody else, well, not nobody, but not many other people can do. So I can say I did that. That's the whole thing. So I want to get into that a little bit later when we have our guests come on, as far as when it comes to the homeless, when it comes to the people who are out here starving. And I'm looking at people, and no disrespect to the people who can do it, but I would love to see them do a video of where, you know what? I'm going to spend $10,000 on all these people here that are starving on the street. You know why? Because I can afford it. If you could put a piece of steak in your mouth that has gold leaf on it, I mean, to be honest, I'm going to be honest. I wouldn't want to sit in front of a tomahawk steak and try to eat that whole thing just because it has gold on it. You would give me the smallest portion of it. And I just want to know, what makes it taste different? Granite is Yagyu beef, okay? It's supposed to melt like butter in your mouth. But it's still a steak, still meat, still food. What's so special about it to the point that you're willing to spend money that can probably do more for people who are just hungry? Just hungry. That $5,000 tip, $1,000 bill, okay, the restaurant made $10,000. I don't think they
I would have been more impressed if you said you took. I would have been more impressed if you said you took two, three, or four, five people into the restaurant and fed homeless people and fed them, and used some of that $10,000 to feed about 15, 35, 40 people, opposed to that right there.
Well, you know what? You know what? I'm glad that you said that, because actually the three guys who were doing this, and they have a site that they do this on a regular. They do this on the regular where they go to and spend hundreds, thousands of dollars all the time. They're on social media. They did buy a family in that restaurant one of those tomahawk steaks. They said, we'll buy that table one. And it was a husband and wife, and they had a little child there, and they bought them one, and they were just amazed with the gold leaf and everything. Which, I mean, if you can afford it, okay, that's cool. But I want to know your background as far as helping out people who don't get food, period. Are you donating to worthy causes? That's what I'm curious about. You're on social media showing how you can spend your money and how much money you have. Show something that you're doing to help people who don't have that. You follow me? Who don't have the opportunity to be in a high-end restaurant with that type of stuff. Show me something that you're doing, you know, because when people complain about, oh, well, these beggars and these folks out here on the street, you know, trying to wash my windows and blah, blah, blah and everything, what are you doing other than getting a bunch of followers on social media, which in turn, as we all know, brings you a lot of likes and this and the other, which possibly can bring you some money, okay, right? And granted, there are some folks who do have, you know, their own social media pages and making money off of them on YouTube and so on and so forth, who are actually helping out communities. But I want to see you show me the money. Show me where the money's going. Like the movie, show me the money. Show me where the money's going when you're doing these type of things. Are you really trying to help, you know, people in need? Or are you just flaunting your spoils?
That's crazy. Cause, you know, even though they fed the people that was in a restaurant, apparently those people could afford to eat there if they wouldn't have been there in the first place. So kudos to you for paying for somebody's dinner. Great. But with everything that's going on right now, I would like to see, because, again, that money could have went towards building, you know, putting into a building for the homeless or the less fortunate or any of that. Like, it's, you ate a steak for $700, that could have fed 700 people, or, you know, something like that. I'm exaggerating, but that money could have fed quite a few people that are less fortunate. And you had one meal for $700, one steak for $700? No.
The steak was,
you know, $700. I mean, like you said, people, if you got it, that's great. Great. Do what you want to with your money. But at the same time, this is partially what's wrong with some of our, with the new generation. They think that that's the norm. That's not the norm.
Correct. Well, look, I'm sorry. I threw that in there. I'm sorry. We have to stay back on page because it is 6:35. And I definitely want to go to what our schedule was, but it just hit me when I saw that, and I was like, this is crazy. This is crazy when we're dealing with, you know, homelessness and everything, and with our guest coming up who is working on trying to eradicate it as much as possible. And I just recently just looked at some of this stuff, and I'm like, these cats are sitting here eating a steak. They're sharing a steak that costs $700. This other person, one tomahawk steak, $700, which to me ain't cooked all the way because I do not eat raw meat. You know, that's personal preference, I guess, for some folks. But Janet Davis, let's get to our topics at hand that we have scheduled anyway. Let me go here and look at Janet, are you there? Hello? Hold on a minute. I don't hear anybody. Hold on. I might be disconnected for a minute. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Let's see what happened to the board. I don't see anything there. Hold on a minute. Something went wrong. I think it's Blog Talk. Let me you better refresh the board. Oh, Lord, I don't need this tonight. Okay, so let me go ahead and open up this mic here. Okay, I see some folks. I guess my mic is open now. Well, let me go back. Okay, I see what's wrong, you guys. So hold tight. Okay, so the board shut down. Let me. Are you there?
Yeah, now I am. Yeah, the board shut down. I got a loud noise, and then everything went blank.
I don't know what happened because I was here and I was looking at the board and all of a sudden the board went blank. Because, you know, I use my phone line separate from my board. And all of a sudden the board went blank. Cotton was still there. But let me go ahead and open up mics that I see waving. I see my brother. By way of my East St. Louis, living in L.A., California, timing. That I don't take no shit, man. Shoot!
Yeah. How are you, Mike? How is everyone? I saw y'all talking the homeless and, you know, people eating a $700 steak, and that was, I was hollering. I said, That's a tomahawk.
Right.
The homeless problem, man, is a humanity problem. It's not even all money. It's a mental problem. There's a lot of people I just don't think they can keep up. There are a lot of people when they had those big fires and everything, lost everything. They didn't have enough insurance to cover a lot of the stuff that they had going on. So people had to regroup, rebuild. I mean, right now you have the great resignation thing going on where people are quitting their jobs. They're not even trying to go because they, you know, they want more. And it's not enough just to continue to pay people the same way. So you have a lot of things that is connected to the homeless because a lot of people, you know, there's the whole capitalism thing. There's the whole humanity. Do we help our fellow man when they down, blah, blah, blah. You got some people that, you know, I don't want to work no more. Screw it. I'm just going to live off of such and such, you know. You know, people living off the grid. Because don't nobody, I mean, it costs money. You know, it costs money to live, especially if you live in California. My sister was just saying to me, should I move to Moreno Valley? She said, you should go anywhere where that rent is cheaper. That's where you should go.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make that decision, you know. And homelessness. And people eating $700 steaks and then, you know, YouTube and all the stuff you do. I mean, you know, they do it to get to look up. And yeah, they're doing it. Yeah, they drink, eating some. But it's just like the Dalai Lama says, you can drink your fine wine, you can have your steak, potatoes and your veggies, and, you know, with all everything. Once you eat it all, it all turns to shit, and you go back to doing what you were doing before.
You know what, Tony, but here's the thing. Now, you live in California, and and the thing that we're, when we were talking about doing this, and coming up in the next hour, our guest will be Lady Justice, who works in her community. I'm pretty sure she can share. But the reason why we decided to do this, because we know that this exists all over the United States, over the world, actually. Okay?
Right.
And as I said, like when I was just saying about folks who do live streams of them eating $1,000 steaks and everything, that's a piece of food. And it's covered in, I don't get, I mean, does it taste any better because it has gold on it? You know, I mean, I don't get that. All right. I just don't. All right. But the point I'm trying to say is that when we look at the homeless issue and we look at where, especially in L.A., you have homeless communities. I live in Atlanta, and I could take you exactly to where the cardboard communities are. But then whenever there's an event in that particular city, they run the homeless out of the area because there's an event, right? Back when the Olympics were here, it was so close to the venues, they ran the homeless out. Well, where do you run them to? And how come we don't have centers for especially during this time of year when it's cold and freezing outside? Now, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to shut up. There's a lot of folks on the other side say, well, if you keep giving them this and you keep giving them that, they're not going to want to do anything for themselves. They're going to always expect a handout. Where's the difference that you think? Of people who really want to do something and the people who are really looking for a handout.
Well,
can you hear me, Mike?
Well, let Tom finish.
Putting the roof over their head. As far as putting the roof over their head, like in L.A., there's a problem with they don't want to build single-family homes in certain areas, okay? Because people feel if you build that here, you're going to bring down the value of my home. So there's all kinds of places to build. So everybody say, oh, I don't want that in my back. I don't want this in my back. You know? So by you doing that, guess what you're doing? You're creating to where the value of the home gets higher because everybody wants a house. But because you won't let me build, okay, that value keeps going up. And so now what are we doing? What's going on now? Interest rates are about to go up, and the value of those homes are going to drop. So whenever the interest rate go up, the value of the homes start to drop down because you can't keep this up, man. You cannot keep saying, I don't want this in my backyard or I don't want that in my backyard. You have to be able to make it to where your fellow man can have a place to lay their head, okay? You know, everybody can't be building walls, you know? And we created the homelessness. That's what they need to say. Oh, I didn't do it. Yeah, you did. Because you didn't make it fair for everybody to get what they need. And, yes, some people ended up on drugs. Some people had mental breakdowns. I mean, to live in our society, Mike, the homeless is a massive problem across the country, and the average American is breaking down mentally. The pandemic is breaking them down. Crime is going up. Don't nobody want to work no more. You know, hey, yeah, those of you, but you know, it's just a mess. It really is. And you got to be on my
side. Okay, but I know that. I know that Jen had a comment. I know you only basically have just an hour with us. Do you have a little bit more time with us as we go into this, as we bring our next guest?
Uh-huh.
So I'm asking, do you have any time to spend with us when we go into our next hour, or do you have something else planned? But if you can stay with us in the next hour, that would be great. I want Janet to go ahead and say what was on her mind. Janet, you were about to say something. Go ahead.
Well, right. The only thing I was going to say is they do have places for people who are homeless. They just don't have enough places.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, you know, you go around Atlanta and certain exits off of 20, I was shocked to see so many tents and makeshift boxes where people are living under, you know, and it's, you know, it's sad. It's sad. But if you get to a shelter early enough, you can have a place to lay your head. It's just getting there early enough.
Well, when Janet said 20, what she meant was Interstate 20 that runs from damn near the West Coast all the way to the East Coast, okay? That's a main artery. And then the thing is that what's just so amazing to me is that here in Georgia, whenever we get weather reports, a lot of times it's like the rain is going to be south of I-20 or it's going to be north of I-20. It's like for some reason the weather knows. You know, honestly, Janet, I'm sure you notice that in the news reports here. There'll be more rain south of I-20 than it's going to be north of I-20. There'll be more snow. And it's like, what is it about I-20 that is the boundary line of weather? And then with what you just said, the homelessness in I-20 runs right through the city of Atlanta, which is the artery of I-75 and I-85 and 285. All of them runs through I-20. Okay? All of those interstates run through the main interstate I-20. And with what you're saying is, as far as the homelessness, there are homeless shelters, true enough, due to the cold snap that we had here. And people up north might say, oh, you all don't know cold. Look, I don't give a shit what you say. Cold is cold, all right? Cold is cold, hot is hot. You know, you don't have to grow up in a certain region. I understand folks up north get colder weather on a more, than a south. Cold is cold. There's a guy I found out that I knew that, or I didn't really know him personally, but I knew of him. He just recently died about a week ago because he fell, hit his head, landed off his porch on the ground in the cold. What was it, like two Fridays ago, Janet, that we had that blizzard?
Yeah.
Well, not really a blizzard, but that constant snow. Never really stuck down here in this area where I live, where Janet lives. She's further north than I am. It stuck on the streets there.
Yeah.
But down here it didn't. But he was covered in snow. They saying that they believe he died of hypothermia. See? He was knocked out from the fall. But the cold is what they're saying is what killed him. Hypothermia. Think about that. And I'm pretty sure that happens many a times all over the country where people die of hypothermia. But now, back to the homeless problem, in which I'm looking forward to our guest who should be joining us momentarily, who is trying to help the homeless, who is an advocate. Like to hear her point of view on these things, because there are locations for the homeless and everything. But you have temporary shelters. Temporary. You have long-term, true enough, based on your situation. But then again, like I said, I go back to the people who have the money that are spending money for, you know, showing a video that, oh, look, I'm eating this steak and this and the other. And I'm not hating them. Don't get me wrong. There's no hate. But I'm curious about what are you doing for humanity?
you sharing that you can afford this, I get that. That's fine. I would never be one to videotape me. In fact, you haven't seen it. You know, I used to videotape about our shows. Janet, you remember, I used to videotape about, what, 30 minutes, an hour before, this is who our guests are, and this and that. But I've never been one to sit up here and videotape myself at some luxury restaurant or this, that, and the other. If I was a Raina who does competitive food eating or whatever, and her being worth, what, $5 million, I think, now and everything, that's her business. That's what she does. That's how she makes her money. I can kind of get that. But I kind of wonder, when you have that type of money and you have a fan base and everything that are spending their time and their money to support you, what are you doing to support people who really need what you're showing that you're doing and enjoying, eating, and people are starving? That's what I'm trying to understand. Now you get it.
Well, Raina makes her money not just by eating, but all the smacking that she does, and it's supposed to be satisfying, that sound, for certain people. I don't get it myself, but that's, you know, she does the smacking, and everybody sits there and watch her.
She's got products.
I think it's
She's
disgusting.
Got products, right? And I don't hate her. I mean, I watch her stuff. You know, I mean, I watch her, and I don't hate her. I don't have no hate for anybody. But I'm just wondering, what are they doing to, and I've said it over again, to share with the public of where this is what I'm doing to help folks that, I mean, because you got folks who have eating disorders. People do eating competitions. Is that helping a person who has a food disorder? Again, I'm not knocking what they do, but the money that they make, are they investing in something positive? That's what I'm looking for. That's what I have the question. Just quickly, I'm going to shift gears before our guest joins us. Black History Month just started. We only have like 7 minutes left before the top of the hour. But Black History Month just started, the shortest month of the year, of course. And now we're about to go into the NFL. The Super Bowl is coming up. And guess what? There's only one black coach in the NFL. Deja vu, right? In 2022.
Right.
Deja vu in 2022. We've seen this before. Even though we had a coach who led his teams to win 8 games in a row in the last 9, all of them have been dismissed of their duties. But still, again, 70% of the players in the NFL are what? Black.
Black. Mm-hmm.
We've managed to have women become assistant coaches in the NFL, even referee. One, I just read an article, and in fact, I saw something just recently, you know, today, of a woman who became the first collegiate referee in college, and later on became a NFL. In fact, she's the only woman so far to actually be a referee in a Super Bowl. But here's a sport, not just in NFL, but really pretty much in college, if they did the numbers overall, correct me if I'm wrong, that there's probably a more larger percentage of black athletes other individuals. But the next season is going to start off at this point in time of only one black coach, which would be who? The coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Tomlinson, which their quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger, retires. So now they have to find a new quarterback. Pretty sure they'll be okay with that, figure that out. But then again, what pisses me off is when people say, well, I don't watch the NFL because these high-paid players, these uppity individuals, and I know they want to see these uppity black guys, because we've had some that act a little ignorant recently, got into a lot of trouble recently. But you got 70% black players. So when you're dealing with an organization that has 70% black players, and if only 12 of them get in trouble, it's going to make news. But let's look at the reality of the whole thing. Who owns the teams? It ain't black people who own, or black individuals who owns these teams, these NFL teams. I ain't talking about NBA. I'm talking about NFL. They're basically owned by white individuals. The richest NFL owner, the richest, guess what team he owned? And they never made the playoffs. They could get anybody. No one could guess?
Well, Dallas won this year. I mean, they went to the playoffs.
Who?
Dallas made it to the playoffs.
Right. And you know what? You're on point. Dallas made it to the playoffs. And you know who the owner of the Dallas Cowboys is? Jones. Jerry Jones.
Yep.
The richest NFL player, I'm sorry, owner, owns the Carolina Panthers. He has almost $5 billion, and I mean billion with a B, more than Jerry Jones. So when people want to sit up here and say, I don't watch anything because he's arrogant ass, you know, and I know some folks, black and white, say, these arrogant ass players making all this money and everything, and they do this bullshit and blah, blah, blah. They're making millions. Do you know the man who signs the damn check has billions of dollars with a B? Come on, man. How can you hate a sport or an individual who plays the sport that makes millions of dollars, but the person who owns that team has billions with the B dollars? Don't you get that kind of like crooked or misunderstood? These guys are out here doing their job on the field. They're the entertainers. These guys who own the team and women. There's a woman who co-owns the definite deal. She co-owns. And if you look at her story of where she was a freaking orphan and became an adopted, and she's the owner of an NFL team for life. So how can you be mad? Janet, let's go to the whole thing about these NFL coaches who have been fired. I hope that you have two of the coaches and what teams, if you have that information available and what you've read. If you could share that, and what should we look forward to next season? Because obviously the teams, and anybody else who wants to chime in, obviously they have to hire a coach. We had a few teams that had interim coaches, you know, because some coaches were fired, some retired. What do you think the vision is going to be, or the outlook is going to be for the next season? Are we going to just have one black coach next year for Pittsburgh? Or do you think these other teams are going to try to make the playing field a little better in ratio of coaching positions and the players that are actually playing the game. Don't everybody get quiet on me now, if you understand what I'm saying.
I just want to say, can I just say something? Michael, I know they got rid of black coaches this year, but they did that last year also. So it's like they're stripping all the black coaches that really have winning games. And to me, that's, you know, crazy. I don't see the method behind the madness.
Well,
but the one guy that was suing his owner wanted him, Flores' owner wanted him to throw the game so that they can get first pick, you know, be like an underdog and get first pick. And because he wouldn't throw a game, that's why they ended up letting him go. He turned down $100,000.
So that was definitely proven, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it's not proven yet.
Okay, so go ahead.
It hasn't been proven yet.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been proven that he got fired because he turned down the $100,000.
Yeah, he's made an accusation, but he has not. It hasn't. They have to do an investigation.
Correct. All right. Right. That's what I kind of figured.
But
it has to be an investigation.
What's been said is that the Rooney Rule, which that you have to give, you know, African American men interviews. Has never worked, and it don't work now, and it's outdated, and they don't, I mean, you need to understand, they really don't want to hire brothers. Only certain brothers they're going to hire, and also, in order to get those jobs, and what has been said, to get the head coaching job, you either got to be a offensive coordinator, you have to either a defensive coordinator, or a quarterback coach. If you're not in those positions, you know, you're not going to be considered for a head coaching job, especially for black guys. You have to be in positions where you're, of importance to where you can make go to that next level. And are there guys out there that they have? Yes, there is. In college as well as for pro. But you got to ask yourself, for as long as football has been around, how many black coaches have you had? I mean, we just now allowing black quarterbacks. It ain't been too long before we had, that we had these many black quarterbacks. So, can you call it racial? Yeah, you can call it racial. Do they really want to pay you? No, they don't. Do they want to have a black dude? Not really. And they don't give a shit. And they never have. Why you think they did what they did to Colin Kaepernick?
Right.
Colin Kaepernick has never been picked up again. And will Flores go down? Will he not get a job? Probably. That might be the last job he gets. But could somebody use his talent? Because Miami did have a winning record.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
They had a winning record.
Hold on a minute. He won 8 of the last 9 games. They were 500 teams. They won 8 of their last 9 games. That's impressive. Okay. And then what I watched, I read an article which really was interesting that we have to look at it where, and I think I saved it, and I don't want to go too long because I definitely want to go ahead and move forward because it is 5 after the hour, and I believe our guest is on the board. I'd like for our guest to go ahead and hit the number 1 so I can see that you're waving your hand so that when we take this quick break, we're going to go ahead and go right into our topic with our guest. But here's the thing that hit the number 1 on your phone so I can see that you're okay, I see you did it. Thank you so much. But I want to say this real quick and then want to move forward. The thing is that where I saw an article, I read one about the fact that there's a lot of there's a lot of teams that have a lot of, how should I put it, where it goes through the family. You follow me? It goes through where, let's say, you look at football coaches, the next coach could probably be a brother of that person, or a son of that person, a cousin of that person, in the upper ranks. You follow what I'm saying? What is the term? I know you guys know what I'm saying. It's not hereditary. It's where
nepotism.
You know, just
nepotism.
Huh?
Nepotism.
There you go. That's it. Of where, you know, you're going to go with the nepotism that's so-and-so's son, that's so-and-so's cousin, that's so-and-so, in the white realm of business. I'm going to trust a family member or someone who's part of the family to be part of this organization more so than an outsider or a person that I don't have any knowledge of, per se, I don't feel comfortable with, but I feel more comfortable with someone that is more like me. You follow me? More like me. More like us. And that's what's really been going on. And if you really look at it, I thought I saved it. And if I find it, I will bring it up later on in the show if I have time. But it was an interesting article that this individual shared of where if you look at a lot of these coaches, there's brothers, there's fathers and sons and everything. It's all been white individuals. And again, I say, these organizations are privately owned. The only football team out there that is not privately owned is the Green Bay Packers. Correct? That's the only non-privately owned football team. It is owned by Green Bay. So when you're looking at sports and entertainment, and I really want to have a show on this, of the fact that private sector based on, you know, what's open. You have basketball teams who are owned by private individuals, football teams, private individuals. These are things that we enjoy and love every season. We spend money to go to the games. We spend money to watch them on the internet, live stream, whatever. We do this. This is our entertainment. But we have to remember that we don't have a say-so whatsoever of how these private companies, privately owned businesses, family owned businesses operate. They have their own judge and jury. If you remember the former owner of the Clippers, they have their own judge and jury about, what was his name, Sterling, whether he could keep the team or not. They made that decision whether he stayed the owner or not. They made him sell that team, the private owners of the other teams, because now what he was doing, he made a ripple in the water of this unique private group. You follow me? He made a ripple in the water. And they said, you got to get out the pool. And they forced him. Correct me if I'm wrong. But it still doesn't change the reality of that. These individuals own the entertainment. These individuals decide who is going to run their business. These individuals decide who's going to be the player and the coach, the assistant coach, the water boy. You know why? Because they write the damn checks. End of story. We're about to take a quick break. And before we do so, anybody want to chime in on that? And we'll move on. And we're going to welcome our guest, Janet Davis. Do you have anything to say?
No. No.
I kind of figured you were like, mm-mm. Let me go ahead and go to Tana. Do you have anything to say on that?
Yeah.
Do you agree with me or disagree?
Well, I just think that, you know, hey, it is privately owned, but you need to also like I'm reading a book right now, the Death of King, which is Martin Luther King's last year, and I'm also listening to the 1619 Project, and this is very much connected to all of that of what you're seeing going on today, of how far we've come and how much farther we got to go. That's all I got to say.
Okay. Fantastic. Thank
very
you, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Cotton Campbell?
Hey, no. I didn't have anything on that topic.
Okay. Well, with that being said, we're going to move on to our next topic, but I think we should take a quick music break. Let everybody go ahead and take a good deep breath before we move on to our next guest, I should say. Lady Justice, I believe, is here on the board, 816-915. And I'm going to open up her mic in a moment, but we're going to take a quick music break. You're listening to the TMGS, the Michael Gay Show. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Hey, this is Cheryl Cooley of the all-female band Climax, and you're listening to the Michael Gay Show. Yeah.
We'll be right back.
welcome back to the TMGS. It's the Michael Gay Show, and I'm broadcasting live from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia, with my co-host, Janet Davis, who is also in Atlanta, Georgia, KC, who is in KC, Kansas City, and, of course, the one and only Mr. Time and Ship in the L to the A, Los Angeles, California. And you know what? We're very blessed to have a special guest here. I had a moment to say hello to her during the music break. And, in fact, during the music break, that's called Paradise. I wish someone could tell me who's the name of the group who recorded that. And I'll give you a hint. Luther Vandross was a member of that group. So if anyone can tell me the name of that group, I might have a prize for you. Well, without further ado, I want to welcome our guests. I'm going to open up all the mics because I had to mute everybody. Thanks to Cotton Campbell for bringing this individual to my attention to be on the show at a last minute, and I thank you so much. Please welcome and put your hands together, you guys. I mean, actually clap into your phone, and welcome to the show, Lady Justice.
Hello, Lady Justice. How you doing? Happy Saturday.
Yay! Welcome.
Thank you for joining us, and happy Saturday to you. You know, it was like a last minute thing, so I'm thankful for you to making time to join us on this Saturday and share what you do and how important it is in your community, and hopefully what you share with us, that people will see that it's needed in every community. Give us a little background about who is Lady Justice.
Well, Lady Justice is, I guess you would, most people would call it a community act. I call it doing what we're supposed to be doing, being shepherds of our own good. So mm-hmm. I don't see, for me, it's just easy. What I do today, people seem like it takes a lot to do it, but it really doesn't. You just have to have a heart and want to do it. And so in a nutshell, what I do as Lady Justice is I go into the community and build unity. And whatever that looks like, that's where I start. So if someone comes to me in a day and they say, hey, you know, I'm having some legal issues, then I meet them right where they are. And that's what we start discussing. If they talk to me and say, hey, I'm in need of some food, then that's exactly what we're going to talk about. I am a person that believes in connecting the dots, building relationships with people that create resources under one roof, where you only have to come to one place and explain it to one person and your will shall be done.
Yes.
Okay. You know, when people are speaking, I try to put myself on mute so I don't have any background noise, but that's in a nutshell. I love it. I like that. So how long have you been doing this as far as helping your community, and also share what community or areas that you've been really working on at this point in time?
So I work in Kansas City, Missouri, throughout Jackson County. I sometimes reach into Topeka, Jefferson City, and basically I feel the needs. I'm a grassroots person, so I've helped start a lot of different organizations in Kansas City. We have the Human Dignity and Economic Justice Coalition that was formed of mostly all clergy except for myself at the time. I was the youngest, so I felt like the baby, and I was in there like a sponge trying to soak up all the knowledge that I could get to be able to distribute that and pass it forward to our future. And for me, our future is the children. And so I work a lot on things that have to do with children. We did a mass mobilization here in Kansas City a couple of years back, and we trotted up to Jefferson City and said that if you guys are not going to talk about what we want to talk about today, we're just going to sing the gospel in here today. We're going to do God's work today. And we set out to do that. We already knew that we were going to be demonstrating a peaceful disobedience protest. We were prepared for whatever was going to come. We said, hey, we had maybe tens of thousands of people that we put on buses, mass mobilized and went to Jefferson City and told everybody, hey, when they tell you to stop singing, you stop. If they tell you to leave this session, just get up and go. We already had people designated that were going to stay there and continue the peaceful battle, and those were 23 of our clergy. They named those clergy the Medicaid 23. We were there fighting for Medicaid. We were there fighting for livable wages, not minimum wage, because what does that look like, right? What does minimum wage versus a livable wage look like? Because living a wage is different from minimal. And so we had to get up there and differentiate those two points. We also had, when the employees walked out of their jobs, we were the ones that walked those people back in and said, hey, you have to give these people their jobs back. And if you don't, we're coming. And we meant that. And so they opened the doors back up and those people were allowed to go back to work. I fight those good fights. I go where people don't want to go. And I've been doing this now. I was 16 when I ever got a title as a boss of something, and I'm half of 100 now, and I'm not going to stop. So it's been a long time. There's a lot of changes that need to be made, and we just all need to remember that knowledge comes from the past and drops into the future, right? So we have to take our historians and mix those babies so that they can grow up and have the same information that we all either have or have missed.
Yeah. Can I jump in real quick?
Sure, go ahead.
Yes,
I was about to throw the ball in court in your court anyway, so go right ahead.
So look, Lady Justice is one of my favorite people. This is, I think when I think about how Karen White wrote the song Superwoman, she is the epitome of that. Like, if you look at Lady J, she is Superwoman. She's definitely all the things. What she is, she's also a wife. She's a mother. She's a best friend. She's a sister. She's an aunt. So if you follow her timeline, she's not just making time to help feed the homeless. She's making home-cooked meals for her own home and doing those things as well. And that takes a lot. So a lot of women are especially this generation, they're not doing that. So not only is she working in her home and extending it out, she's doing all of these other things. And when people are calling her, she's taking that time for them to do that as well. So that's the part that I wanted to jump in, because she left. She might be being modest or whatever, but let me just give her her flowers. And to her horn for her, because I get silly. Me and her get silly, and I get silly with her at times. And she'd be like, you ain't right, because you're not helping my silly right now. But every now and then, you need that silly for everything that's going on out there. She's doing it all. And a lot of us need to do more and step up and do just as much, because it's so much that needs, as she just stated.
Right. You know what? I mean, it's very rare that I'm a loss for words, because I love the way you introduce yourself and where you just upfront and just being honest about who you are. And so there should be no mistaking of who Lady Justice is. So you made that very clear to all the listeners. So with that being said, you're doing this in your community, and you shared why you do it. But, you know, as you do so, what are you looking at the outcome? And maybe that's a question I'm asking too far advanced, but the outcome of it, because first I really want to go back. What made you feel like this was so important for your community, and how do you feel that what you're doing can actually spread out through other areas that are not within your reach, you know what I mean? Because I agree with you that we should work together and I'm a very much of an advocate of helping out the homeless. Now, I also have to ask you this. What about the naysayers that say when you give, some people will take advantage of the giving that you are offering of not wanting to actually work for themselves, you know what I'm saying? Well, what do you have to say to those folks where folks will feel like, well, if they're going to give it to me, I'm not going to go forward? What do you have to offer to push them forward outside of the point that you're giving them a lift up? You follow what I mean?
Yes. So what I say to naysayers is don't do what you don't do, right? If you don't walk across the street by yourself, walk across the street by yourself. I do everything by myself, so I'm not afraid. And it all comes from, let me just back up a little bit and tell you the real reason why I do what I do. When I was 16, I lost my best friend. That was my dad. I think every young lady wants and should be a daddy's girl first. Start there. That was my best friend. I know that there's nobody else in this world that can replace as a father, as a friend. He was all of them. That was when I was 16. Now, when I turned 19, I lost my mother. She was murdered by a serial killer. Someone who I met, someone who was already classified as a serial killer, someone that a stipulation of his parole was that he had to enroll into a college. Hey, so for me, that if you're a serial killer, you go sign yourself up for this college, and there's all kinds of people take it. I didn't have any, and I grew up in Palm Springs, California. That's where I was, and now I'm parentless at 19. Here I am, 50, just now realized orphan. So I had a name, but there was nobody there for me, although I was given that name. There's no support systems out there to help me. No, you know, and family will tell you that they were there, but if they were there how they were supposed to be, they would be still here right now. And we just get down to the heart of it, right? And so I feel like from that, all the things that I had to endure in this life with moving to Kansas City at 19 and trying to be with family and, you know, and that didn't work. Started living with people who I didn't know and got a job downtown and ended up facing my own serious race. The one that way. I feel I owe it to my community to empower and give people the knowledge that I had. I don't want anybody to have to go through what I went through at that age because you end up in it. But I tell people, ask me, how did you end up this strong and this courageous and this people? It was about choices, y'all. Life is about choices. It's not about your feelings so much. It's about choices. Because I could feel all different kinds of ways, right? I could have felt like I hate men, my mom's gone, my dad's gone, my whole life support, my umbilical cord, okay, was cut. So the life I knew was no more. And I had to find something else. Did I stumble? Did I fall? Yes, I did. Yes, I did. But did I get back up? Hell yeah, every single time. And there were naysayers that said, hey, you know what? You'll never be anything. But guess what? God willing, and here I am today to testify to say I'm still here because I'm that child that you sent to school, right? Because I got grants, you paid taxes, you sent to school to go get that information and bring it back. I wanted to be a judge.
Mm-hmm.
I have a degree in criminal law. Do I use it? Yes, for free, for people that need it. So everything that I do, I remove the obstacles. So most of the times for us, the obstacle is money. The obstacle is we all think that we should be getting compensated with green stuff that folds in your hand in order to feel whole. I don't need that.
Right.
people to be happy. I need people to love each other. That, for me, is fulfilling. That money stuff, it comes with the territory.
Because,
and it's like they say, if you build it, it will come. If I build it, it's going to. I'm just trying to build up people.
I have to stop there for a moment because you shared something that, you know, I'm sure a lot of folks right now just took a gasp about the loss of your father and then the loss of your mother by a serial killer. And we don't really, I mean, be honest, I mean, I'm still trying to figure out how to ask you this. Because now we see a lot of stories of murders and killings by cops, you know, and this and the other. You know, we see a lot of cases, and I follow a lot of stories like that. To me, reality shows that people think are reality shows is bullshit with these actors and things are not reality shows when it comes to what you went through. That's reality. You know what I mean? It's not a show. It's reality. And I've shared this with my co-host. I don't watch a lot of stuff. I watch court TV because, to me, that's reality. It's not a show. It's reality. It's a real court case.
Right.
It's where you – and when you hear about the stories, we all, you know, are so concerned. We all be like, oh, that's a shame and everything. They need to get this and that and the other. But we don't follow up to see what that total outcome is, right? On the other hand, I do. I follow these cases to see the real outcome because it might take 4 to 5 years before they And most of us don't even know what the outcome is. In the situation with your mom, and I don't want to, you know, really make that the topic of the conversation because I want to stick to what you're doing for the community. But the situation with your mom, after that whole devastating situation, what made you become, was that really a major thing that made you become the type of person you are now? I'm pretty sure, but share with us, how does that affect you and how much did it make you push forward to do what you do? Is that a good, I mean, is that, a, I mean, are you
it
understanding
is.
My question in a sense?
Yes, you want
to
know. You want to know what drove me to be who I am today, from where I was. A lot of crying, a lot of BB and CC whining, a lot of Anita Baker. It was music therapy. Let's just put it that way. Because that's all I had. For me, that was the truth, and the world was a lie, right? Because if sitting here talking about my mother, and we're saying this was already a classified area of how the population to do it again. So for me,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm hearing a lot of noise in the background. Anybody that has their mic open, if you're not speaking, as you know, it's the rule here. Please put yourself on mute. If you have any noise in the background, you know, for the quality of the show, please put yourself on mute so that we can hear the conversation. Go right ahead.
So, I don't know. For me, I think that everything that I got from my parents, even though I lost them both at a young age, my mother died at my father passed away at 38. He was given a time limit, so I had to live with that. I watched him die, and my mother was taken away from me so abruptly that I just had to figure it out, figure out my feelings. I had to figure out, was I going to hate? I had to figure out, did my parents give me enough to love people? Is everything that I'm supposed to be, did my parents give that to me at this point? And so with that, I began to move around. I bumped my head. I stayed in California for a while. That didn't work. And I came to Kansas City. Well, in Kansas City, I ran across a whole bunch of different things. You know, like I said, I was 19 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I ran into the date rape pill. I ran into homelessness. I ran into having a baby and nowhere to go. I ran into not having anything to feed her, didn't know what to do. I had nobody to tell me anything. And I cried through it, and I sung about it, and I thought about it, and I wrote about it. I've been writing the book since I was 16, and it still hadn't been published yet. It's still on paper. So there are still things that I need to do for myself that I haven't been able to do yet. I don't know if it's because I'm not past it, or like now is the time for me, because I've never been so open with anybody about any of this.
Mm-hmm.
We've just recently, let's say a year or two ago, we did a documentary on my mother, and the only reason we did it was because the person that murdered my mother, he died. He died in prison after 30 years. People ask me, well, were you happy about that? No, why am I happy about having to pay for this man to have a life and my mother's doesn't? Why am I happy about a man that lived to write books, a man that lived to put pictures up on the internet? Why am I happy about going on Facebook and Googling my mother's name and then his face pops up? Where's the justice? Where was the justice for me?
Right.
As a family member, right. I want to go ahead and throw the ball over, man, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but Cotton, I want you to go ahead and pose your questions and everything. And we're going to do some overtime on this show here. Cotton, go ahead with your questions, and then I want to bring in the other co-host with any, if you don't mind, any questions or comments. Cotton, go ahead.
My only comment to Lady J is just that continue doing what she does. We're watching you, and so many young girls need to understand what it is to be a woman of strength. You have women out here constantly saying, I'm a strong woman. This is what it, you never have to announce that you're a strong woman, because it's shown in your actions all the time, all the time. Like, I watch her, and I'm sitting back like, I can't wait to be like her when I grow up. But this is who she is, and I love her to death. So that's my comment. I didn't have a question.
Okay. Janet, do you have a question or comment? Janet Davis, you there? Co-host Janet. You're on the line.
I was on mute. Sorry. I was on mute and I started talking and forgot I was on mute. I was just wrapped up into just listening. It's awesome to be able to just sit back and listen to some of the things that you have done as far as the community and you know, helping the homeless, because we have so many people out here nowadays that look at people that are homeless when they're, you know, driving around, and they might be on corners or, you know, don't have a place to stay at night, and they just keep moving, don't even care, you know. So just keep doing what you're doing. It's awesome.
Thank you.
Okay. Again, I want to say, I want to thank our guest, because I really want to invite her to something else, but you guys hold tight for a minute. I'm just looking at the board. I don't think I missed anybody else. Do I have another co-host? Because the light just went out on my eyes. I got to go ahead and bring the board back up and see who's all on the board. Please bear with me. I think Timon is still here. Timon, are you there?
Yeah. I have, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have any questions?
Yeah. I just want to say to you, congratulations on the work that you're doing. I've been working in probation for over 30 years, dealing with juvenile criminals, you know, and you live out in Kansas City, Missouri. I'm from East St. Louis, Illinois. So I know the Midwest and the work, but hey, continue to, you know, continue to do the work that you're doing, working with young girls, helping the homeless, because humanity is key. No matter how much money you got, if you got no peace in your life, you're not going to be able to enjoy it anyway. And health is key to enjoying anything that we want. So you're doing that, and you're spreading it, and you're bringing it to our people. You were talking about history. I was letting everybody know that I'm reading Death of a King, which is about the last year of Martin Luther King's life, as well as the 1619 Project. And I recommend both of those books for everybody. When you connect what's going on today and our people and everything, we never stopped. You know, we never stopped. If you know your history, it can take you forward, and it will give you that strength to keep you going. You know, and you're doing that. And I believe that your parents would want you to do what you're doing. They would be so proud of you. Your mom and your dad would be so proud of what you're doing and the work that you've done in your community and helping others, everything. So, you know, God bless you and keep doing it. Stay strong.
Thank you.
Amen. So with that being said, and I know we got like 15 minutes left, because really I kind of found out a little bit, you know, we're very good at doing our research here, okay? And I found out a little bit about your past before you coming on the show. I didn't want to bring it up, but I'm glad that you did bring it up, you know, because I wasn't going to try to squeeze it out of you. But I'm glad that you share that, because you share, you know, I love people who are honest to tell the truth, and you tell the truth. I love people who are honest with themselves and will be honest to share the truth about themselves. Because that's the type of person I look at being, and I always have been. And I won't say I always have been. In the last maybe 5 or 6 years, I'm very open and honest about who Michael Gay is. You know what I mean? So for you to share that dark part of your life, it's reality. You know what I mean? You're not trying to cover up. You're telling the truth. And you're sharing something, but you're making something out of it. You're building something out of it. You understand what I'm saying? And I commend you on that. I really do, to be able to share that part of your life and let folks know what it feels like. Because a lot of folks don't understand it. A lot of folks can't comprehend it. But to hear it from someone like yourself, at least they can get an understanding that it's real. You follow what I mean? And so I truly appreciate you. You know, I really do. And you sharing it here with us. And granted, our show is archived, so anyone who wants to go back and listen to any episode of the show, when they come across this one, they will hear you sharing it. And with that being said, I would love for you to come back and talk with us on different situations, different topics. Like I said, I'm the type of person, I believe in reality, not the reality shows like the crap that they put on television, but the reality crime, you know, that goes on, the injustice that goes on in courts and this and the other. If you have an interest, and also into how we can do better and help the communities and what communities need help. You're doing it in an area just in one state, but there's places all over the United States. And I wish I could have more individuals like yourself of having all of you on, not all, but as many as possible, sharing and networking. Here's the thing that I said to Cotton, and I also said to other co-hosts. I don't understand how come stores and companies like a Walmart or a chain or whatever, I shouldn't say Walmart, but just any food chain, can throw away thousands of dollars worth of food and not find a way to feed folks on a regular basis. I don't understand that. every day they're throwing away millions of dollars nationwide worth of food. You really see them wrong. And there's millions of people that are starving. Do you have a setup, or do you have a way that you work with local businesses that will donate the food and it not be an issue that you could share with the homeless? Are you working on that, or how does that work?
We do that. Basically, that is exactly what happens. I get stuff from we get produce, and I get cases and cases and cases of produce. We've been given cases and cases of meat. 3 weeks before the pandemic actually started, we partnered with a meat company, and they were giving us pallets and pallets of meat. We had neck bones, we had chicken wings, we had chicken legs, thighs, we had turkey legs, we had turkey wings, we had bologna, we had bacon. We had all of the things that make up a household, right? Because we can have all the canned goods we want, but if we have that main staple, we still may be hungry. And so we talked about it, and we said, what is it that we can do that would create a big impact on our community? What could we give them that would actually make a difference? We always give produce. We always give hand sanitizers. We give out gloves. We give out disinfectants. We give out toiletries. We go to these food banks, and they give us canned goods. But is that really the bulk of our issues? No. Our meat is. And so we partnered with the meat company and said, hey, we're going to give cases of meat away. And we started first giving it away to try to give it to different organizations. And when you say networking, that's what it brought me to, because that is exactly what we tried to structure. But you know the way the black community works. I don't want to work with them. They're doing this. It's not about me, and it's not about you. And if you keep acting like that, the people in your community are going to keep not getting what they need. If
Correct.
People just understand, it's not about us. It's about helping people. And it's not about we're all out here enabling people. These people, some of them don't have it. And so what if we run across 100,000 that have it and are still coming to get it? So what? Who cares? Because it was never your intention to question.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead and finish. I'm sorry.
It was never your intention to create a restriction, right? You're saying if
right.
you need something – stop by. We have our drive-bys. You just pull up, and we ask you how many people in your family, and we give you enough to feed them for a week until we see you again. We were actually servicing 3,000 people a week on Thursday. Never running out of anything. Always had enough to give. And then after we gave, we sent other people out with all that stuff that was extra and gave to the homeless. Or people in shelters, or people in women in battered shelters, children in foster care. Mm-hmm. Anybody that we could, that we knew needed it, we gave it to them.
But now, Lady Justice,
and
I have to say this, is that way. Now, again, I'm going to play devil's advocate. Because unfortunately, there are people who will take, who still do take advantage of the system. Oh, they're going to give away free food. Hell, I'll play the role. I'll go ahead and do this. I'll play like I'm homeless and this on the other, right? Now, I had said to my co-host, is that where, you know, when folks are not allowed to get certain foods necessarily because due to the health, you know, that companies, I'm sorry, are not allowed to give things away because due to the fact that they feel like there might be a health issue, you know, poisoning and this and the other. And I said, well, why not have a waiver that when you do certain things? We're able to give away food during the holidays, but how come, you know, we always talk about giveaways during the holidays, the Thanksgiving turkeys and this and that and the other. No one's checking all that, but it's being given away, the Christmas stuff, right? No one's questioning that. But you see it on television every holiday season, once a year, you see it. But how come this cannot be done in a way every day of the year based on an organization like yourselves stores or like you said, the food processors or the meat processing companies, because they know they have a lot of product they're going to have to throw away at a certain period of time. They already know this. Instead of donating it to the people in need, how come we cannot come up with a system like that first and foremost instead of destroying meat? Because we are talking about perishable items. We're talking about, granted, we are carnivores. We eat meat, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Why kill an animal just to throw it away and not use it for what it is intended and processed for based on laws? Why is that happening? How can we get around that? How can we change that?
A lot of it is most of these organizations are connected to a lot of red tape, which means they get grant money and all these different things. We're self-funded. So we do whatever we want when we want. We get donations. We get everything donated, or we take it out of our pockets and help whoever we have to help. Whenever you have democracy involved and you have red tape and you have grant writing and you have all these things in place that you think is beneficial, it's an obstacle in some cases. So, and then the other side of that is people will give to who they want to give to, right?
Yeah.
So let's just say Bath and Body Works, which is my favorite lotion store, they give stuff away. But if you don't ask them right, guess who's not going to get it?
I know.
Right. Exactly. My favorite part.
That's it. It's
We have 5 minutes left on the network, okay, as far as, and I'm sorry I have to interrupt, we have actually 4 minutes left on our live stream. I'm sorry when I say live stream. I mean on our internet show and on our phone line. We can still communicate afterwards. Whoever's on the phone line, you can still talk. We might go an extra 5 minutes after the Blog Talk broadcast, but I want to say this before we go. I'd love for you to come back on the show immediately and let us do
anytime
some research, because this is I might want you back next week, because I'm going to do some research on this. We'll definitely talk about it. I'm the only one who can see every number on the show, so if you don't mind, I'd like to take your number down and see what we can do as far as communicating more about this. And because this is really important, you guys. So I want to turn the mic back over to Cotton Campbell with her final thoughts and questions, and then the lady of the house, Ms. Janet Davis. Cotton.
I just wanted to say briefly on when he was asking about, when Michael was asking about what can we do for those people that are taking advantage. I mentioned earlier, Lady Jason Michael, that we can't even focus on those people. We just have to focus on those who really need. And like you said, if they come a million times and they say they need, we just going to give it to them a million times at the end of the day. That's, if they're not right, that's between them and God. We just have to do what we do.
Period.
Okay. That's a good point. That's a good point. And that's something we can go back into. I want to go ahead and throw the ball into Janet Court. Janet, your last thought or comment?
Yes, it's a comment. I agree with Cotton. If they need help and they really don't need help, that's between them and God. And there are places right here in Georgia that you can go to get food that they get from the grocery stores and things instead of throwing it away. So there is help out there. You just have to know how to tap into it.
That's right.
That's very true. That's very true. Hey, look, you guys, I want to thank you. You got 90 seconds left. I definitely have to go ahead and end the show, unfortunately. But we can still chat a little bit. After the, I'm sorry, I'm typing in something.
But anyway, we continue. Okay, so want to say thanks to Janet Davis, Cotton Campbell, of course, the one and only Mr. Time and Ship, and all of my TMGS family who are on, in fact, Ron Jones. Happy birthday, Ron. Enjoy your birthday weekend. Our special guest, Lady Justice, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to talking to you more and hopefully have you back on as soon as possible. You've been listening to the TMGS, the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. Have a great remainder of your weekend. We'll see you next Saturday. And look, coming back soon, some great recording artists and guests and our always loved co-host, Miss Denise L. Wilkerson, will be joining us in the month of August. Yes, with some great guests. Take care, you guys. I love you. Bye-bye.
Love you, too. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.